This is Sound Ideas. I'm Mike McCurdy. Hear how social media is making it easier to interfere with justice. In McLean County, three people are facing charges in connection to a witness intimidation Facebook page.
This sort of reveals a dark side to social media use, perverted for witness intimidation.
GLT's Ryan Denham talks with legal scholar John Browning and others as he reports on outing confidential informants on Facebook. Black Lives Matter Blono bailed a mom out of jail in time for Mother's Day, and they're trying to do the same for a dad on Father's Day. Hear how the bail system works against people without money. And GLT's John Norton talks with one of the bands playing the Bloomington Center for the Performing Arts Summer Solstice Concert. All of that and a GLT News update on the way. It's Thursday, June 14th, 2018. This is Sound Ideas on GLT.
Support for the Sound Ideas podcast comes from GLT listeners. Join the community of news consumers who listen to Sound Ideas and are also willing to support it financially. Learn more about listener-supported radio and GLT at WGLT.org.
This is Sound Ideas. I'm Mike McCurdy. For police and prosecutors, it's never been easy to get witnesses to testify, especially in cases involving violent crime where retribution is a real concern. Now social media has made it even more difficult. GLT's Ryan Denham explores a recent case in McLean County that reveals another darker corner of the digital age.
Three Bloomington Normal residents were charged this spring with harassing witnesses using a private Facebook group called People Against Snitches. It's an unusual case for McLean County, but mirrors a national problem in the justice system, social media making it easier to find and intimidate witnesses.
This is a big issue. It's growing.
That's Christine Hammond, executive director of the New York-based Prosecutor Center for Excellence. She works with prosecutors to improve the criminal justice system.
You can do it from the privacy of your own home in your pajamas. You don't even have to bother to go out and shake somebody up.
In the McLean County case, the defendants are 46-year-old Robin Casey of Normal and 55-year-old Margaret Stevens and 54-year-old Mark Huffington of Bloomington. They're accused of posting names and photos of confidential police sources in the Facebook group. An attempted harassment charge against a fourth defendant was dropped in May. Stevens allegedly intended to harass or annoy a witness in a case where the defendant ended up pleading guilty, so they didn't have to ultimately testify. Prosecutors say Stevens caused, quote, mental anguish or emotional distress to the witness, identified in court documents only as J.S. by what she posted on Facebook in December 2017. The Facebook group has since been removed. It's unclear what case or cases the witnesses were connected with, and the McLean County State's Attorney's Office and police declined to comment on specifics of the case. But after the charges were filed in March, Bloomington police said in a statement that it takes a, quote, strong stance in the protection of our witnesses and victims of crime in our community. There have been similar episodes all around the country. Online witness harassment reached near epidemic proportions in Philadelphia in recent years, according to the district attorney there. In addition to popular social media sites like Facebook and Twitter, one witness in a criminal trial even received comments on his Xbox Live profile from the defendant, warning, "I wouldn't laugh too much, you a dead man walking." John Browning is a trial lawyer in Texas who studied legal issues related to social media. His 2014 paper called Snitches Get Stitches tracked cases of online witness harassment stretching from New Mexico to New York to Michigan.
This sort of reveals a kind of a dark side to, you know, social media use and seeing it perverted for witness intimidation.
Browning says witness intimidation has been around as long as there have been courtrooms.
Witness intimidation is a problem generally, but with the immediacy and the widespread dissemination offered by social media platforms, it can take it to a whole new level.
Sheriff John Sandage says concerns about witness intimidation were one of the big reasons why the McLean County Law and Justice Center enacted its cell phone ban in 2017.
We had instances of people filming testimony on their phone and then posting it online to intimidate people. We kind of drew the line at that. Not only is it a security issue for witnesses, and it could also be a security issue for courthouse staff.
McLean County State's Attorney Jason Chambers declined to comment on the specifics of the People Against Snitches case. Lawyers for the defendants did not respond to requests for comments. But in a statement, Chambers says, quote, "Witness harassment is not something we file in often, but it is not an unheard-of charge or one we are unfamiliar with." He says the facts necessary to prove the offense are narrow enough that it is not a frequent occurrence, and ultimately, we can only go where the facts and evidence lead us, unquote. Christine Hammond's nonprofit has written extensively on witness intimidation in the digital age.
These witnesses are sort of a forgotten constituency. When you think about domestic violence and sex crimes and so forth, there's huge funding sources for them, you know, the Office of Violence Against Women and so forth. But there's very little for witnesses who are brave enough to come forward in neighborhoods where it may be very dangerous for them.
She says prosecutors are now counseling witnesses on basic social media safety, telling them they could be more vulnerable because of their testimony.
10 years ago, it would have been harder to find someone or their children and their interests. You know, you could look in the phone book, but you couldn't get much further than that. Now you can find out everything you want to know about somebody.
John Browning says part of the problem is people may not fully realize the implications of their online behavior. And he says some states don't have witness intimidation laws that have kept pace with technology.
Whereas we do have a First Amendment that protects unpopular speech, and some of these things fall under a protected area.
The three defendants in McLean County allegedly used a private Facebook group to share information about confidential sources and witnesses. Private or secret Facebook groups are widespread and generally not anything nefarious. Families use private Facebook groups to stay in touch. GLT even has one for election 2018. But they have become a safe haven for seemingly illegal behavior, too. Brian Krebs is an investigative reporter and online security expert. He studied private Facebook groups devoted to illicit activities. Earlier this year, his Krebs on Security blog flagged more than 100 groups involved in a broad spectrum of shady activities, including spamming, wire fraud, account takeovers, and phony tax refunds.
People involved in all kinds of shady activity may not believe what they're doing is wrong. At the end of the day, they may just feel like the likelihood that anybody's going to hold them accountable is very low, and I would say if they're doing it on Facebook, that's true.
Even today, a quick search of snitches on Facebook reveals many anti-snitch groups. Users can report concerning groups to Facebook for review. But Krebs says those reviews are typically conducted by poorly paid employees halfway around the world who often don't speak English as their native language. They're more equipped to find and flag inappropriate photos, he says. If it requires reading, good luck.
They have quotas. They have quotas to respond to the certain number of these abuser complaints. And what they do is they look for pictures that are, you know, you don't need to understand English to know what human anatomy looks like.
Facebook did not respond to requests for comment. Browning says this new form of witness intimidation is another example of the law struggling to keep pace with technology. He says it's becoming increasingly important for prosecutors and defense attorneys to stay fluent on digital communication tools as more and more cases intersect with sites like Facebook. Defense attorneys now have an incentive to do so. Browning says more than 30 states have ratified a 2012 change from the American Bar Association, which added awareness of emerging technologies to the definition of competent representation.
Nowadays, lawyers who ascribe to kind of a dinosaur or Luddite type of mentality when it comes to technology are now in danger of being found not competent in representing their clients.
Charges against the three local defendants remain pending. They're Robin Casey, Margaret Stevens, and Mark Huffington. They're free on bond. I'm Ryan Denham.
The three local defendants in the witness harassment cases are due back in court next month. You're listening to Sound Ideas on 89.1 GLT and WGLT.org, Bloomington Normal's public media.
Support Support for GLT comes from Heil Group, providing collaborative workshops and individual coaching designed to transform employees into effective leaders. Heil Group gives employees the guidance and feedback they need to attain their strongest possible performance. Information at heilgroup.com. This is 89.1 GLT and WGLT.org.
Ahead on Sound Ideas, an update on the McLean County economy. That story from GLT's Eric Stock as Sound Ideas continues on GLT. I'm Mike McCurdy. There are a lot more African Americans behind bars than whites, and money is one of the main reasons. Black Lives Matter Blono is raising awareness of how the conditions of bail work against people who don't have a lot of money. In May, Black Lives Matter started a GoFundMe campaign that raised more than $2,500 for the release of Myleria Shane Briggs in time for Mother's Day. The 21-year-old had been jailed since May 1st on charges of burglary, retail theft, and contributing to the delinquency of a minor. Black Lives Matter now has started a similar campaign to raise bail to release a man for Father's Day. Black Lives Matter Blono leadership table member Olivia Butts tells GLT's John Norton why the advocacy group thinks the money bail system is insidious.
I think when you think about the criminal justice system, Black folks are affected disproportionately, right, in a variety of ways. Black Lives Matter here in Bloomington Normal has talked about the disproportionate amount of arrests, for example, the disproportionate amount of canine searches here for black folks in Bloomington, and that spirals all the way into the criminal justice system and when we think about bail, right? So Black folks are over 2 times more likely to be arrested. They're 2 times more likely to be detained pre-trial, and Black men typically have it's around like 30% higher bail charges than their white counterparts. So we're focusing on people who are most affected by pre-charged bail.
So they have a higher bail amount in general, and I would think in general they have a lower access to money as well then, right?
Mm-hmm. Okay. Resources typically are harder to reach, right? And so something like bail or trying to pay your bail before you're charged, it's really difficult to do.
One of the arguments for keeping bail is that it keeps maybe dangerous people from getting out and maybe re-committing a crime.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and so I think you need to remember that when we're talking about pre-trial mm-hmm. bail, these people are still presumed innocent, right, in our system. So it's not like keeping people in jail is going to make the community safer, right? Because if they had enough money, they would already be out, which makes it sound like you're implying that people with more wealth are less likely to commit a crime when they're out on bail, and that's just not the case.
When you choose someone for this Mother's Day and Father's Day, are you looking at someone who has committed not a serious crime?
We don't focus too much on the crimes.
Because, again, the argument is, well, there's a dangerous person being held for a good reason. Maybe it's not a good reason to let that person out of jail.
Right. But again, if they had the money, they would already be out of jail. That's what we have to remember, is that when we're talking about pre-trial incarceration, these folks would already be out of jail if they had the money. So we don't really need to think of this as a public safety concern, because it's about wealth, right? And it's about your ability to pay bail. And if you could pay it, you would already be out. So here at Black Lives Matter Bloomington Normal, we're just looking to reunite some families back together for Mother's Day and then again for Father's Day. So that's our goal, is to raise awareness around this issue of money bail and its disproportionate effects on Black folks and poor folks, but also just, yeah, remember that it's not necessarily about safety, right? It's about your ability and your wealth.
Some of the pushback you were getting on social media, I noticed, is, well, instead of focusing on someone who has maybe committed a crime or at least been arrested for a crime, why not get that money to other poor people who haven't committed a crime?
Yeah, and I think it is very interesting, some of the pushback that we get, and I think that's just, we're trying to encourage some of these conversations, right? Money bail, for people who might be commenting on our Facebook posts, money bail might be something they've never thought about before, right? We can give back in different ways. We do choose to give back in different ways. But this is just one campaign that is focused on this one issue of money bail and how it affects Black folks.
So it's one thing to have a campaign and raise awareness and educate people, but to enact real change, mm-hmm. you really need to be within the system, do you not? I mean, you need to be in Springfield. Is Black Lives Matter making those kind of inroads?
Yeah, I think that when you think about money bail, it is a big system. And us bailing out some folks is going to create awareness and do some education on a smaller scale. But ultimately, we would be hoping for the elimination of money bail. And there's a lot of advocacy groups and justice groups working towards that. And so I think kind of our role in all of this is to raise awareness in our community. And then, you know, maybe our community can go out and support folks, politicians, et cetera, who might be interested in looking to reform our bail system.
So would it be incumbent upon even the local chapter of Black Lives Matter to have a relationship with Dan Brady and Jason Berrickman and Bill Brady, even, you know, down in Springfield, because this is where the change is actually going to happen, right?
Yeah, I think not only would it be good for us to kind of raise awareness, but create some relationships, especially with people, just local citizens, right? People who live here, and talk to them about this issue so they can contact their representatives as well.
Where are you at money-wise now for this Father's Day?
We've raised about $500 on our GoFundMe, so we're hoping to raise as much as we can and then identify a father that we can get out at the end of this week.
Well, let's get to alternatives to the bail system. Would a tiered bail system be a better idea or acceptable in that the bail you have is based on your income? So maybe someone who is a doctor would have to pay a $2,000 bail to someone who is making minimum wage. It's a $20 bail or $50 bail or something.
That's a good question. And maybe this is just my opinion, but I think any type of bail system where it's, I mean, I guess that would be a little bit more fair if it was proportionate to the amount of income that you have. But I think wealth shouldn't be that big of an issue.
Black Lives Matter would like to get rid of the bail system, the money system, period?
I would say that there are much better options to be put in place than the current money bail system.
Okay. Can you give me an example of?
I wouldn't say that I'm advocating for one specifically. And like I said, I'm not an expert. But I think when we look at some states like Kentucky or even Washington, D.C. has implemented some other things such as like risk assessments or needs assessments to look at people on a case-by-case basis and think about, okay, what do they need to make it back to their trial? Or what is their risk in this community? And then sometimes they can even be monitored by a certain agency to make sure that they would come back.
So who's making that risk assessment then?
It depends. So one example I've seen before is an independent body that is outside of the justice system that kind of looks at people on a case-by-case basis and then makes that recommendation.
So if a judge is doing it, they vary all over the place as to
yes,
the severity, right?
Exactly. And that's a lot of times why we see Black men having such higher bail amounts than their white counterparts.
Olivia Butts is our guest here on GLT Sound Ideas. She's on the leadership table of Black Lives Matter Blono, and we're talking about the bail system, specifically here in McLean County. Are you specifically looking to bail out a person of color?
I think that the reason that we focus on Black folks is because the bail system and the justice system disproportionately affects them, right? And we are Black Lives Matter Blono, so we try to focus on people of color. If we had enough money, we would bail out as many people as we could, right, regardless of race. But in this specific instance, we would prefer we would like to bail out a person of color.
Two parts then to that.
Sure.
Do you set yourself up for criticism by focusing only on a Black poor person?
Black Lives Matter Blono focuses on issues that affect people of color. So if another organization in this community wanted to bail someone out, maybe they might focus on women, right? Because that's the group that they focus on. We focus on Black folks and people of color. The reason we're taking on this initiative is because the money bail system affects people of color and poor folks specifically. So the criticism that we might be only focusing on Black folks, right, that's our goal, is to focus on people who this system unjustly affects. So
you targeted one person because of money limitations for Mother's Day and probably only going to be one for Father's Day because of money limitations. What's the broader goal here?
Other than elimination of money bail and kind of reform to that system, I think it would be really neat to have something like a community bail fund where we could raise money and support different people who maybe the community thinks needs to be out of jail at a certain time. So it could be a fund, right, that people donate to where it's used for people's bail continuously and it kind of rolls back over and people can continuously donate.
Olivia Butts with Black Lives Matter Blono speaking with GLT's John Norton. The GoFundMe campaign to bail out a father on Father's Day can be found on the Facebook page for Black Lives Matter Blono. Butts says the group is still looking for suggestions for a person to bail out on Father's Day. It's Sound Ideas. I'm Mike McCurdy. Illinois' African-American unemployment rate is higher than that of any other state in the nation. For years, Illinois has been near the top when it comes to the rate of blacks who are out of work. For Illinois Issues, Maureen McKinney explains.
Anthony Myers, a 56-year-old African-American man from Joliet, says he believes he was fired from his longtime hotel management job because of his race.
I just found it really emotional, distressing. And even to talk about it now, it breaks my heart. Because I give the company everything I had.
Myers, who says he nearly drained his retirement savings while unemployed, is hardly alone in his distress.
Nobody's been left behind more than African-American workers. Illinois has done about the worst when it comes to creating economic opportunities and employment opportunities for African-Americans.
That's Robert Bruno, a University of Illinois professor who directs the labor education program there. He and other experts say an unequal education system bears a lot of the blame for why Illinois fares so poorly in comparison, but largely it is plain old-fashioned discrimination at work. Ralph Mertiri is executive director of the Center for Tax and Budget Accountability, a nonprofit think tank.
It doesn't matter how you slice the data in Illinois. You do see racially disparate outcomes that can't be explained by anything other than discrimination.
The black unemployment rate in Illinois for the first quarter of this year was just over 9% as opposed to about 4% across the board. Since the Great Recession, there has been a gap between unemployment rates for blacks and whites that hasn't closed. Anthony Myers says he experienced that discrimination firsthand at the Fairmont Hotel Chicago, where he worked for more than 24 years, most recently as director of banquets. He says he believes racism led to him being dismissed in May 2016 after he was involved in a profanity-laced verbal exchange. He is black. The other employee involved was white. About a week after the incident, he was fired.
I wasn't as angry as I was shocked. I just couldn't believe that here I ran a department in a hotel for a company that generated $16 million plus annually and was treated like a hardened criminal.
The issue is further complicated when a lack of education and prison time are added to the mix. Marcus Butler, a 45-year-old African-American man, can relate. The Springfield resident has been unemployed except for day labor or part-time temporary work since October of 2016. That's when he was dismissed after 5 years from his post as a phlebotomist. He says another employee instigated a fight, and Butler was fired after defending himself. Since then, he says he's been able to get interviews, but not jobs.
Because I'm a convicted felon, you know, I have a few more hurdles to jump. But for some reason, when you get to, you know, that infamous line number 7, you know, have you been convicted? But in the long run, they seem to always have a better candidate, or we're going in a different direction.
Butler spent 7 years in prison for stealing a purse when he was high on heroin. Since his release, he's volunteered at several youth organizations. Among other efforts, he's helped young people to prepare for the GED. He says he recognizes that his own lack of a bachelor's degree holds him back. The African-American youth he is helping may also have been plagued by what Ralph Mertiri from the Center for Tax and Budget Accountability calls unequal and inadequate education. African-American kids predominantly come from impoverished neighborhoods with poor tax bases, he says. Illinois ranks last in the portion of school funding paid for by state-based resources and first in the amount of property taxes used to fund education. A spokeswoman for Governor Bruce Rauner wrote in an email that he's noted the decades-old situation as a problem. Last year, he signed bipartisan education funding reform into law. Ralph Mertiri says education funding reform means that school districts will receive state money based on needs such as low-income population. Anthony Myers, the hotel employee fired after working 24 years at the Fairmont, says he has some hope for better treatment of African Americans after getting a new job at another hotel.
It's been an eye-opening experience to see what it's like to be treated like a human being and not to be looked at as a black man versus a white man's world.
I'm Maureen McKinney.
And I'm Mike McCurdy. You're listening to Sound Ideas. You can hear Sound Ideas with your smart speaker. With Google Home, just say, OK, Google, play GLT's Sound Ideas podcast. Or listen to everything GLT has to offer with Amazon Echo. Just ask Alexa to play NPR. Find all of the individual stories and interviews on today's Sound Ideas at our website, WGLT.org.
This Week in This American Life, a congressional candidate, a Democrat, a progressive, who is not getting a lot of love from his own party, which is mostly tilting away from progressives for the midterms. But what's different about this candidate is that he's perfectly willing to tell us all the stuff we never usually hear, all the behind-the-scenes arm-twisting and shenanigans by party leadership that have been driving him crazy for months. His tell-all this week. Listen Saturday at noon on GLT, Bloomington Normal's public media.
Support for GLT comes from Luther Oaks, with an established reputation in providing assisted living. Immediate availability with a simple monthly rental program. Moving assistance available by calling 309-557-8000 or visiting lutheroaks.org. This is 89.1 GLT and WGLT.org.
It's Sound Ideas. I'm Mike McCurdy. McLean County's economic outlook remains strong despite recent job cuts and other restructuring at State Farm Insurance. That's according to Ed Charlo, vice president of Busey Bank. He's been crunching McLean County's economic figures for the past 20 years and presented his annual outlook in an address at Illinois Wesleyan University.
Ed, you mentioned in the beginning that McLean County has responded to the challenge, specifically in reference to the cutbacks that are underway at State Farm. How has the county specifically addressed that challenge?
Well, I think when you look at the comments that were made today about businesses here, about businesses that are expanding here, and then you even look at State Farm, where there's a little bit of a cloud from State Farm, but my gosh, you know, they're employing over 14,000 people. And I think you feel a pretty good sense of people wanting to do things right to make things work here in the area. I think you look at the EDC, you look at the Chamber, you look at the Convention Visitors Bureau. All of them work so hard to try to promote this area. And I think that's what helps make this area be recognized nationwide.
Normal Mayor Chris Kuhs said in an interview on GLT just last week that this area maybe took for granted State Farm's economic might over so many decades, and it's understandable, as their founder said many years ago, everyone needs insurance. But in the past couple of years, as there has been some shifting going on there, the community maybe was a little flat-footed in preparing for that. Is that fair to say, and has this perhaps caused the community to sort of marshal its forces to overcome that?
Well, there's an old saying that complacency is the enemy of excellence. And I think it's easy to take things for granted. In life, we take a lot of things for granted. But if it's not there, if it's slipping away, many times you say, we need to jump in and get this taken care of. So I think that you know, we're just very, very fortunate that State Farm is here. State Farm is maintaining a very large population base. Any other city in the United States would love to trade figures on the economy and on the employment of a major place like State Farm. So, you know, we're very fortunate to live in an area. And then again, we talked like this morning about agriculture, how big agriculture is here in the community. We're producing more corn, more soybeans than anybody else in the country. You can't get any better than that.
And I want to get to agriculture in a moment, but just rounding out the thought on State Farm, while their numbers have been level and, in fact, have increased to some extent in terms of jobs in McLean County, the ones that they're losing are on the higher end of the spectrum in information technology here in the past few months, being replaced largely by lower-paying jobs. And what we're hearing locally is that could have an impact on the housing market in particular. What kind of expectation do you see that having here in the coming months and possibly coming years?
Well, it's kind of the thing that has to work itself out over time. People presents a great opportunity for people to buy a home that maybe they couldn't have bought otherwise. I know a lady that works at the bank told us that she and her husband bought a home that they thought they could never afford, but they look at the price they were paying now, and they said, this is a bargain. So, you know, possibly it's creating opportunities for people that didn't consider there would be opportunities.
Is there concern, though, that that could lead to eventually a drop in EAV, property tax revenue coming into local communities, and how they could overcome that?
Well, I think it would definitely affect your valuation. But when you look at the number of larger homes, it's going to work itself out over a time period. It's sort of like nationwide we had the housing recession, and over time it worked itself out. And so I think it'll work itself out here.
I'm Eric Stock. This is Sound Ideas. We are visiting with Ed Sharlow, Vice President of Busey Bank, after presenting the 20th annual McLean County Economic Outlook. You'd mentioned the agriculture sector, which of course is huge in McLean County, though the output has declined over 25% in the last 5 years. And I guess a large part of that could be that more farmers are retiring and fewer are able to take over their land. Is there concern that that output for such a big part of our economy locally could continue to decline?
Well, the value has declined because of prices. The yields have been much better than ever expected. So if we ever get this trade dispute figured out, which could have a big impact on agriculture, I think, you know, you're looking at the opportunities to have higher production and possibly higher prices.
And unemployment, the numbers have finally dropped to pre-recession levels. Is there concern that a part of that could be many are leaving the workforce through retirement, the baby boom generation, some giving up looking for work, and some moving out as there's been a out-migration from Illinois in the past few years?
Well, I think those are all factors that play into the unemployment rate. But when you look throughout the whole state of 102 counties, McLean County has one of the lowest unemployment rates, and it always has. And for a major metropolitan area like this, that's pretty significant.
And this, your last year as the presenter for the McLean County Economic Outlook, after some 54 years at Busey Bank, where you started as a part-time janitor, going all the way to the boardroom, eventually serving as president. There's certainly a story for people to learn from, I imagine.
Well, thank you. I've been very, very fortunate. When I started, the bank was about $20 million, had about 25 employees. Today, we're over $8 billion with 1,300 employees. So it's been a great ride. I've enjoyed the opportunity to do what I've done.
GLT's Eric Stock with Busey Bank Vice Chairman Ed Sharlow, who presented his 20th Annual Economic Development Outlook for McLean County. You're listening to Sound Ideas. Battery technology has come far enough that landscapers, amateur and pro, can begin to think about leaving gasoline-powered yard tools behind. Hear how battery power can help you in this edition of our gardening program, Grow. Just about everything you can do with a gasoline-powered tool in the garden can be handled by a quieter, cleaner, battery-powered electric tool. I'm Mike McCurdy. This is GLT's Grow, your source for practical gardening advice from our expert Patrick Murphy from Illinois State University School of Biological Sciences and the curator of the Fell Arboretum. Murph, thanks for coming by.
Mike, nice to see you.
On today's Grow, we're talking gadgets, specifically electric gadgets, no cords. I've cut through my share of cords. Have you cut through cords before with, like, hedge trimmers?
I have. I've done it in the house and outside the house. And
it startles me every time. They're always plugged into GFI outlets, so nobody gets hurt. But it's like, bzz.
I know, and that's always a frightening occurrence to encounter that and to discover that you've made that accident.
No cords with these devices, though, that we're talking
about.
Yeah,
and you touched on a couple of the biggest selling points, and that is the emissions. There's virtually none. And if you've ever worked in a commercial groundskeeping kind of setting, or you have a large piece of property, and you've been operating a string trimmer for a while, it's like holding a toaster oven under your arm after a while.
And you have the exhaust.
Yeah, exactly. That too. And, Mike, you have the vibration, the intense vibration of hanging on to a string trimmer that's maybe old or out of balance. It's a trifecta of misery.
So yeah. Do these work in a commercial application, or are we really talking about, you know, home landscaping?
I think that there are some applications that are commercially friendly, and I think about my travels in the Southeast, and I've actually seen tool rigs, that's the big trailer that they pull behind the vehicle, with solar panels on them. And I thought, well, what's the solar panel for? Well, the solar panel was for a computer that helped the crew stay on their route, and it also kept the owner of that vehicle and trailer aware of where they were at all times. Now, that's an excellent gadget.
Sure.
No stopping for a two-hour lunch at Casey's or whatever. And another thing that's really big in the Southeast and other parts of the country where the landscaping happens 12 months of the year, it's best to do that work early in the morning. A lot of times those guys are driving down the road at oh dark 30 and they're folding stuff up a little bit after lunch. And then that vehicle can sit there and charge a solar panel and it sells. I know that DeWalt has a kit that includes a multi-tool exchange that's all fueled by one battery. And I have a string trimmer out of that complement, and not having to breathe the exhaust, like you said, is just enormous benefit.
And I have the Ryobi set, which,
great product.
So it's all one battery, and it works across all of their tools. So I have the leaf blower, the string trimmer, the hedge shears, and a 10-inch chainsaw, which is great for small jobs
right
around the house. You're not going to be able to cut down a big tree with this thing or do firewood or anything, but it does get the job done.
Right. You might not be able to make a living with it, but you can take care of your own property, and they're quite affordable. And then I think about the options if you have, say, a large home, or if you had a home with detached areas. So if you had like a boat dock, or you had a little shed where you kept your golf cart and your golf clubs, this battery-powered stuff is fantastic because you could actually have more than one set. I think that that's a great benefit of the affordability and renewability of that battery-powered equipment.
And we're talking about everything from hand shears, as I mentioned, to chainsaws, even lawnmowers. But some of those batteries aren't interchangeable or work across all platforms. They're more like what you might get in a car.
Right. But I think that because there's changes in how we approach our lawns, I think lawns are going to get smaller because we have to conserve water, and that battery-powered lawnmower is probably going to make a couple of evolutions, and then they'll meet in the middle at a perfect spot, hopefully.
So there are some trade-offs here. What are the benefits, do you think, of going all battery-powered?
The first one that I think of is kind of a toss-up between the limited stress on yourself and the limited stress on the environment. The quiet one, I think your neighbors are going to love you for that, too, if you're the eager beaver that's getting started at 7:30 or 8 on a Saturday. They're very quiet, too. So all of those things make for a more harmonious presence while we're outside working in our gardens and everything.
So the downside of going all electric with batteries has to be the battery.
And your ability to charge it between uses. So that's kind of why I'm of the opinion that you might struggle making a living with it if it's something you needed to use day after day. But I have never had a problem with keeping my stuff charged up. And that could just be attention to detail. But I've also, like you, I've used mine to the end of its life. So even the vacuum cleaner that we have in the house is a battery-powered vacuum. Mm-hmm. And it acts the same way. It just uses its battery up, and then it's done.
Yeah, that's one of the benefits of these new batteries is that there's not this slow decline in power. These lithium-ion batteries sort of work at full power until they don't have any more to give, and then the device just stops working.
And there's plenty of people that, for whatever reason, preference and taste issue, they might not want to mow during the heat of the day. Let it charge back up during the heat of the day, and if you didn't finish your project, maybe you could knock it out there at sundown.
So another downside are the batteries themselves. At some point, the tool may actually outlive the life of the battery. What do you do with the battery? I assume you can recycle them.
Well, here in Bloomington Normal, they have hazardous disposal opportunities during the year, and I believe that they're managed through the Ecology Action Center here in Bloomington Normal, but I know lots of communities have these opportunities to dispose of hazardous waste, not just our old batteries, and all kinds of batteries, not just the big batteries that fit into the power tools we're talking about, but the ones that are in the flashlight, the ones that are in the remote. as well as any unused Roundup. You want to get rid of that. Unused paint, all that stuff goes to the same spot. The same people help manage its disposal.
And then you could also call the local battery shops that they might take some of the recycled batteries as well.
Yeah, and I think that that's an industry that's going to evolve also, because I've met people in my life that started businesses collecting rare minerals and circuit boards out of old electronics. A lot of the components that make up the batteries are reusable, but I just think that that's a capitalist opportunity.
Yeah, that's not a do-it-yourselfer thing,
absolutely,
though, because some of those
not.
Chemicals and breaking into some of those batteries can be hazardous.
Yeah.
Is it helpful to store the batteries inside instead of a sub-freezing garden shed all winter?
Absolutely. My understanding, too, is it's not good to leave those or any other battery laying on bare concrete. Hmm. So if you had a station in the house where you had like a toolbox or something, if it's a metal toolbox and it rests on the floor with that battery in there, you could conduct through the contact. The way to get around that is have a wood or a piece of carpet or a piece of rubber or something like that at the bottom where that battery is going to rest. And it's always best to not only to avoid letting them get freezing cold, but you don't want them to get smoking hot either.
So is there an upper, I mean, if it's 110 degrees outside, there are going to be very few people actually using a string trimmer, I would hope.
Yeah, but I think of how easily it could happen, right? So say I'm coming over to your house to help do some little garden party in preparation for some entertaining you're doing, and we get sidetracked, and that string trimmer's in the back of my pickup truck cooking in the sun. What you might find is that it just doesn't work while it's very hot. And once it resumes normal temperature and the battery stabilizes, it might work again.
Just like my iPhone.
Yeah, it is like that,
yeah,
too.
It'll shut down for a while until it cools off.
And, you know, I overlooked another detail related to your question about, you know, what are some of the cons? One of the cons is, say, with the lawnmower, you're getting a 20 or 22-inch cut out of that gas-powered, out of the battery-powered mower. You're getting that large of a cut or larger with the fuel-powered mower. So you might have to take smaller bites, but I think that homes and yards and everything are kind of shrinking at some level. So I think that there's a good meeting in the middle there, too.
And less maintenance?
Less maintenance, for sure.
That doesn't mean no maintenance, but you don't have a gasoline-powered engine to maintain.
That's right. And you don't have filters to change, oil to change. And when it comes to your battery-powered stuff, you can use the blower before the battery runs out to clean off all the other tools.
If you have any questions about tools or anything in the garden, you can submit them at wglt.org/grow. Next week, we'll talk about irrigation, specifically lightweight irrigation kits. Do-it-yourself kits, Murph, is that what we're talking about?
They are, yes.
All right, that's Patrick Murphy. I'm Mike McCurdy. Send your gardening questions to wglt.org/grow. It's Sound Ideas. It's hard to play uplifting music when your heart is hurting. The husband-wife team behind the Madison, Wisconsin-based gypsy jazz band Harmonious Whale found that out when their son died on his 30th birthday. Harmonious Whale headlines the summer solstice concert at the Bloomington Center for the Performing Arts tomorrow night. Mandolinist and guitarist Sims Delaney Potoff tells GLT's John Norton via Skype that he and his wife Maggie got the call about their son while the band was on the road.
We were in some godforsaken town in North Dakota. We got a call in the middle of the night and came home, and Henry had died of a gunshot wound, and it was just guys messing around, you know.
Man, talk about devastating, goodness. And here you are being an uplifting gypsy jazz band that is the Dr. Feelgood of music. I can't imagine that. Imagine it took you a while to kind of get back to playing music?
Well,
or was it more of a healer? Did it help you heal?
Yeah, it had to be that. You know, there were gigs on the books, and frankly, we couldn't afford to not work. You know, this is what we do. So we followed Henry, and it's kind of a teachable thing, you know, for us as well. Now, everybody, let's recite the laws of thermodynamics. The first law of thermodynamics is you cannot create nor can you destroy energy. So somebody dies, their body, you know, we buried him. It was heart-wrenching, and then we got to work on staying in touch with them. And there's some pretty amazing stories of contact from the spirit world.
Let me go there. You say you went to work staying in touch with him. What does that mean? How did you do that?
Well, okay, the first day, the day after he died, we're just trying to, like, assess, you know, what do we know? Well, this completely sucks. he's gone, and WTF, you know, is going on here, man. And so we had, you know, I had to get him out of the morgue. We had stuff to do. We made an obituary. His name is Henry McKenna Delaney Potoff. Google the obituary. It's a beautiful picture of him. And so, okay, so I'm having coffee the next morning, and we've got a lot of work to do now, you know. And there's a turkey on the roof of the house. I walked out, and what's this turkey doing in the roof of the house? And it did this turkey thing, and then it just looked right at me. I mean, it just right through me. And I just started crying. I said, Henry, is that you? And it walked down the line of the roof. It's over the porch, and my office studio is there. And he pecked 3 times on the window, and then he turned and looked at me again. So we just kept in touch with him. And by the time it came to, this was March, by the time we got to late April, we had a pretty sweet gig on the books and thought, we have to do this. We have to do it and really try and hold it together. And it became clear to me that as a mandolinist, I'm kind of a perfectionist and I'm always kind of struggling with things. And there's this bit of a negative thing of like, blew that, or, you know, that's the best you can do. Oh, that sucked. And, you know, artistic criticism. And I realized that that just completely gets in the way. It's completely egoic. And music is this pathway to the other world. I mean, what else could it be? Just sound waves that go out there and they just exist and they're vibrations. And with every note, Henry was in every single note. And we just, our hair was on end. The concert was just amazing. Maggie and I both thought, as we took the stage, we both thought they know, they all know. And as we talked to people after the show, none of them knew.
That's Sims Delaney Potoff as our guest here on GLT Sound Ideas with the Gypsy Jazz Band out of Madison, Wisconsin, called Harmonious Whale, in town this weekend for the Summer Solstice Concert at the BCPA. I'm going to go in a different direction. Your song Money Song has been used by public radio stations across the country, and just by coincidence, we're having a one-day drive coming up on June 21st. We're going to have to maybe use your song for our fund drive.
Well, all right. Heck yeah.
Is this an original song? Did you write this song?
Yeah, Maggie wrote it, and it just, she's just pondering, you know, just thinking things through one day, and thought, you know, the lyrics are pretty true, just, you know, we all need a little help now and again, I could use this, or I could use that, it's, you know, where's the money? So, and it seems like, you know, with, we here have a Wisconsin Public Radio, we're good friends of those guys, and they're centered here in Madison, and also WORT is our local listener-sponsored radio station, and we help them a lot with fundraising, and it's just, you know, the idea of we vote with our dollars, you know. Every time we go anywhere and spend some money, we're saying we approve of that business, or we support that business. And I think radio stations these days are extremely, extremely important at getting some truth out there, especially these days with, like, just that fake news has become a word that we were to say. How ridiculous, you know? Don't say ridiculous things.
I heard it's love that makes the world round and round, and money can't buy happiness. So I sent a box of smiles to my old landlord, and now I've got a new address. Quicker than a dog.
I've talked to a lot of jazz people lately, and we've been talking a lot about how the young people are bringing some life back into jazz, whether it's the entertainment value of what they're doing or skewing jazz in a little bit different way. Maybe they're based in jazz, but they're not playing straight jazz. And there seems to be a little bit of a revival on, you know, in jazz music itself.
I think so. And again, when you do what you love, you let the chips fall where they may, you know, and there's always a little bit of intelligence at do what you love and then see if it's marketable or see if anybody cares. I'm too stupid to have done that. I play the mandolin, so I could have played a guitar, you know, an electric guitar, and played rock and roll and had an easier career. But we did a gig in Annapolis, and really nice concert series. They put us up in this really beautiful hotel. It was just Jazz in the Powerhouse, I think was what they called their concert series. And they just referred to it as jazz. So, it's, you know, we got jazz next week. Okay, yeah. And we got rooms at the hotel, and we had a special parking place for our van. And our guitarist, who was a little bit uppity at the time, he went to get the van out. We had to get on the road, and he went to get the van out of the parking. And he paid some exorbitant fee for parking. And he got in my face about it. I paid that out of my own pocket. I was like, don't worry, you know. I thought parking was complimentary, so we'll take care of it. And I started, I asked the concierge, and then he got to the desk, and they got the managers. And it started this whole buzz of, like, they paid to park? No. Jazz doesn't pay. No, jazz never pays. Jazz doesn't pay. And that became the Jazz Doesn't Pay tour. It was, the whole place was a buzz with, like, no, jazz doesn't pay. No, you give them this money back because jazz doesn't pay. So we kind of ran with that one.
It's paying off for you. We're excited about it. We're excited to have you in town, Sims.
I think, and it's an influence. You know, I think this idea of, like, I mean, even politically, you know, just independent voters are brilliant. And vote for the man, not the party. You know, vote, do what you want to do, not because there's a category for it, but it's because it's what you love. And I think the idea of whether or not it's jazz, I couldn't care less. It's us playing music that we believe in, and it's a virtual guarantee. You come to a Harmonious Whale show, and after the show, look me in the eye and say that you didn't feel it, you didn't get anything out of that, I'll give you your money back.
Sims Delaney Potthoff of the Gypsy Jazz Band Harmonious Whale speaking via Skype with GLT's John Norton. Harmonious Whale headlines the Summer Solstice Concert tomorrow night at the Bloomington Center for the Performing Arts. Showtime is 7 p.m.
For a little peace of mind. Yesterday I drove an Escalade. I was the star of my
Thanks for choosing Sound Ideas on WGLT Normal. Our website is where you can find the Sound Ideas interviews and stories you heard today with help from Charlie Schlenker, Eric Stock, and Ryan Denham. WGLT.org is the first place to go to subscribe to the Sound Ideas podcast. Also look at Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, or NPR One. We want to know what you think of Sound Ideas. Post your comments at facebook.com/WGLTFM or tweet, use the hashtag Sound Ideas. We're all at WGLT News. I'm at Mike McCurdy. This is 89.1 GLT and WGLT.org, Bloomington Normal's public media.